coming to cinema near thee in 2020. One of them action films like what you've seen at Pictures or illegally copied off Kazaa. He is Phil Cattle, a no-nonsense bog cleaner who accidentally fights plans to, I don't know, code swap for rockets or something like that. And he says his famous line like this.
Do we really have to?
And his partner is no-nonsense, smooth-talking, toilet-duck-drinking fella, Ben Baker, who says, "When you get them tomatoes!" And together they are Don't Let's Chat 2020 Very Tired Men.
This is nothing. This is nothing.
Good evening, film fans out there in the audience. What, like, them films you've seen?
Yeah.
On the big screen. I am Ben Baker, 2020's Ben Baker. Hello, Happy New Year.
And I am a reissue of 2019's Phil Catterall. I'm very sorry about that. It's
taped over several times. It's mostly Phil. It has got a little bit of War of the Monster Trucks on the end.
I've been remastered to 16:9, but I have been panned and scanned, so the top and bottom of my face are not visible.
It's the request we've put in many a time. hello. In case you're wondering what all that nonsense was about in the beginning, it's because I'm just right excited. Because not only is it a new year, but it's January, and January is when all the best films come out. Definitely not ones that they bury in the post-Christmas rush. And this year, Bad Boys 3, Bad Boys for Life. And that is pretty much obviously what you describe me and Phil as.
Sure.
For life. It just keeps going.
It does.
Are you excited about the new Bad Boys film, Phil?
No, I'm not, because
no, of course you're not. No, why would you be?
Despise the works of Michael Bay.
I mean, it's been 17 years since Bad Boys 2 came out.
Why? Who was asking for a third one?
Martin Lawrence's bank manager, presumably.
I was gonna say it.
So, in tribute, the first chart this week is going to be the longest gaps between sequels. Now, obviously, 17 years is not enough to get in the top 10, amazingly.
Okay.
And I've got the list in front of me, so...
Number one.
Tron to Tron Legacy.
Okay, yeah.
Gap, 28 years.
That's quite a long gap.
Some might say it could have been longer for him to finish a script.
Oh, it's all right. It could be worse.
It is fine, but again, it was like, we're just going to do Tron Legacy because we could do it better now because the graphics, like, are easier to do. And people have, like, got, you know, very nostalgic for Tron. And then they made it, and then...
It's fine.
Yeah, it's all right. I don't recall anyone who has really an opinion.
No.
Beyond that, on Tron Legacy.
The video game Tron 2.0 was quite good, but that had nothing to do with Tron Legacy at all. So that's...
Yeah, well, it was 28 years between those two.
Wow, okay.
And that's only number one.
Wow. Number two, then.
Mad Max. Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome, 1985. Mad Max Fury Road, 2015.
Yeah, that's a bit of a gap.
29 years.
I mean, there's the question of, is it a sequel or something else? It's kind of something else, isn't it?
It's a different actor, but it's the same director, writer, scenario.
Oh, yeah, yeah. But I mean,
you know,
it doesn't necessarily feel like what they're trying to do is go... These events occurred in this order. This is the sequence of things that happened. It's going for something a bit more, if you'll allow me to be a tiny bit pretentious, mythological than that. It's
yeah.
So yeah, okay. No, I mean, it counts. It definitely counts, but yeah.
I mean, George Miller did not do many films in between. He produced a few things and that. But do you know, he directed exactly five films between those.
Wow.
The Witches of Eastwick.
Okay.
Lorenzo's Oil.
Right.
Babe, Pig in the City.
Uh-huh.
Happy Feet and Happy Feet 2.
See, it seems like he spent those intervening years going, what can I do that's the opposite of Mad Max?
Yeah.
Just so as I can build up enough steam to go back and make the most Mad Max film of all the Mad Max films.
Yeah. Yeah, and it went too far. It worked.
100%.
Let's move on quickly to...
3.
I'm not sure these were... tell me if I'm saying this right. Star Wars.
Never
Return of the Jedi and The Force Awakens. A gap of 32 years.
So you're going for, like, chronological sequence?
I'm not going for that. In sequence, in theory, there's 32 years between that. I thought I'd put that in just because some people will say, it don't exist, and some people are like, yeah, he does. But the fact is, if I didn't put that in, it'd be Wall Street. And who wants to talk about Money Never Sleeps?
Yeah, exactly. I mean...
So, yeah, they're good. There's been another one out recently. I have opinions on it. And those opinions are not controversial in any way whatsoever.
I have opinions on it. My opinions are, yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Yeah, fine. You're fine.
I guess it's fine.
Fine.
You know what?
You're fine.
I'm going to venture an actual opinion. I would have liked it more if I didn't get the feeling that a lot of the script writing process was J.J. Abrams frantically crossing out things that Rian Johnson had written, saying, no, that's not what I meant.
Where's the baby Yoda gone?
And his famous penis, yes.
He seems to be editing up with pictures of Baby Yoda every time there's a bit that he didn't like. Just hovers past. like done in, like, you know, Movie Maker.
Not even Movie Maker, just literally someone pushing it with a stick. Can we have number 4?
Number 4! Again, another one which is... It is a sequel. It's The Maltese Falcon to The Black Bird,
right?
Which was made in 1975.
So hang on, Maltese Falcon was what, 1930-something?
41.
41, okay. That's the Humphrey Bogart
one. So there's a 34-year gap. Just enough time for everyone from the original to die.
I mean, yeah.
30 years after the event of The Maltese Falcon, Detective Sam Spade's son, Sam Spade Jr., is charged with protecting the titular bird statue from a series of greedy pursuers.
That's... I wasn't aware of that one particularly.
And there's a reason, I suspect.
I'm familiar with The Maltese Falcon, because that's good. That's like set in the 90s. So that's set in the 20s. They filmed it in the 40s, and then they did the sequel in the 70s. Interesting.
Yeah. That's a 34-year gap to tell that story. And well done for Sam Spade for renaming his child Sam Spade Jr. Because
just made life a lot easier.
Sam, you did it, Eddie!
Someone went through the original script and just kept adding Jr. after everything. Let us move on to number 5.
Blade Runner and Blade Runner 2049.
Yeah, that's a fair gap.
Gap of 35 years.
35.
And I think both films are absolutely fantastic.
Yeah.
There was a long time it was like, you felt wrong whichever cut you were watching.
Yeah, I mean, there's elements of the voiceover from the original cut that have grown on me. So the voiceover where he sounds knackered and fed up because he is entirely appropriate for Deckard as a character, although some of the lines are just garbage. And I like the fact that the unicorn dream stuff is not in the original cut because... I have complicated feelings on whether Deckard should be a replicant or not. That's all.
And if you don't know what we're talking about, I mean, just Google it because you've had 35 years.
Yeah, exactly. So
I mean, you've had so long, Blade Runner is now.
Yeah.
Like, the past has become the future is now.
It was last year, specifically.
It was the end of last year, yeah. And I really do genuinely love the sequel. I think it works really well. It looks magnificent. And Dave Bautista's in it. So, you know, everyone wins.
Briefly. Should we move on to number 6?
6 is two of your favourite films.
Go on.
The Wizard of Oz, 1939.
Yep.
And Return to Oz, 1985. Gap of 45 years.
So we've talked on this podcast before about how Return to Oz can... Have you got the bleeper out?
Because I would say die in a fire would be fine.
Okay, well, it can die in a fire, and then we can dig the ashes of it up and then burn them again and then piss on those ashes and then throw those ashes into the sea. That's what can happen with that. I hate it.
That's fine. Yeah, it's not only is it disrespectful to the original, honestly, it's so horrible.
It is
unpleasant. I cut a bit of it out. I did a Halloween DJ thing, and I made a video show in the background. It was like bits of old horror trailers and grindhouse things and bits from The Young Ones Nasty, for example, and like Ramon's Pet Sematary video on that. And I put in a bit of that. And honestly, it was the only bit that anyone stopped and noticed that. It was the bit at the end with the Gnome King when he's starting to fall apart and all that. And everyone was just like, what is this? I'm like, this is a children's film. This is a film for children.
Yeah.
There was a previous sequel. There's been a few. There was a Filmation Journey Back to Oz in 1972, which is an unofficial sequel. But I've skipped that because I just don't think it really counts. And the wizard doesn't actually appear in that version, except on a version shown by ABC in 1976, which features live-action segments starring Bill Cosby as the wizard.
Oh, no. I mean, no.
Been no attention to the men behind the screen. Do you know Return to Oz when it opened?
Yeah.
Because you assume that it was at least successful. It wasn't. It finished seventh in its opening weekend. It made $2 million.
I'm not surprised. But, I mean, it was one of them that they thought was going to be the big success for kids, because I had the book of the film with all the pictures and everything.
Oh, yeah. It was all the spin-offs, yeah.
Seven.
Seven. The Peter Pan, 1953, and Return to Neverland, 2002.
Wow.
A gap of 49 years.
Mm.
The Return to Neverland features Wendy's daughter, who refuses to believe her mother's story about Peter Pan during the Blitz. And is brought to Neverland by mistake. Basically, another one of those like made director video that they got greedy and brought out of the cinema.
Okay.
Instead, and then went in the Disney vault.
So we're not going to count Hook then. Hook doesn't.
No. I don't know really, because it's. I suppose they're going by the fact that it's animated.
Yeah.
I don't like the idea of like Wendy's gone back. You know, she was a kid.
Yeah.
And then she has to go back and. She's had it off. She's done it. And Peter Pan's still a child. And he's like, oh, hello, Wendy. I still think you're cute. And she's like, yeah, all right, mate. Yeah, all right.
It's like, you are a literal child. Please go away.
Oh, incidentally, you see the octopus over there? He's voiced by Frank Welker. Just so we're aware.
Well, yeah, it's an animal. So, yes. Any animal in anything is voiced by Frank Welker. Eight.
It's Mary Poppins.
Oh, okay, yeah.
1964. And, of course, Mary Poppins Returns from 2 years ago now. 2018. 54-year gap.
Fair enough.
And, yeah, it's good. Songs are good.
Put Emily Blunt in more films. That's fine with me.
Yeah. She's married to the correct one off The Office.
Off the correct office as well.
Yeah, off the correct office, yeah. I can't believe they're in a quiet place too. That's really, like, just...
Quiet harder.
And we stick with Disney at...
Number 9.
Fantasia to Fantasia 2000. Which, of course, came out in 1999. There's a gap of 59 years.
Yeah, I mean, fine. It's...
All the stories, like Fantasia's big thing, like putting visuals to bits of orchestral music,
and
nobody was interested. And then they went, I know what kids will want 50 odd years later. They don't want it.
It's fine, it's not for me, it's fine.
It's like, I'll be honest with you, for years I didn't realise it was a new film, I just thought it was like a new... Because obviously they were doing that Disney Vault remastering things, you know.
Yeah, they were.
Celebrities in Fantasia 2000 include Steve Martin, Itzhak Perlman, Quincy Jones, Bette Midler, James Earl Jones, Penn and Teller, and Angela Lansbury.
Hold on. Go back one.
Yep. Hey, the Magics, the left wing, think the Magics go in the pocket of the left wing. And then Teller says...
It's a good joke you just did.
Yeah.
Hold on.
Yeah, it's good.
Yeah, I think that's it. That's all the information we have on Fantasia. Should we move on to number 10?
Yeah, and same wheelhouse. Bambi to Bambi 2. Bambi 2, 2006. Don Quasi. 63 years. If ever... There was this period in the mid-2000s where Disney just made sequels to everything. And they basically threatened Pixar with the same... because their contract was running up. They was, we're just going to make off loads of knockoff versions of everything. Bambi 2, weirdly, takes place in the middle of Bambi. So it takes place after his mummy's shot, right, but before he becomes an adult.
Okay. I mean, weren't some of the Lion King sequels like that as well, where it was like while he was a young adult rather than an actual adult?
Yes, it's 1.5 or something.
Yeah.
This one's got his dad in it, who is, of course, played by... Patrick Stewart.
Right. I mean...
7 out of 10.
Some funny bits, yeah.
I don't know. I've not seen it. No, I'm never going to see it.
Fair.
63 years, that gap.
That's quite big.
Making it the longest between films until... I don't know. If we have 64 years, how old are they going to be for Bad Boys 4?
Dead. They're going to be animated corpses at that point. Can I throw one in that I'm not surprised isn't on your list? Because I don't know if it actually counts. But the fact that it exists amuses the hell out of me. Mm-hmm. So, Easy Rider, 1969.
Yeah.
Easy Rider, The Ride Back, 2012. So, 43 years.
What is that?
So what seems to have happened is that some guy just got the legal rights to the name Easy Rider.
Oh, no.
So it's about Peter Fonda's character's brother and his family and makes barely any reference to the original film whatsoever.
Oh, no.
It's apparently very, very bad. One original character is mentioned and is related to...
Wow.
Yeah. So Leonard Maltin has called the film a bomb and described it as a staggeringly bad attempt to cash in on the iconic original and that it is poor on all accounts.
Hey, Phil, do you want to make a One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest? No, wait, Two Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
It's got the same cuckoo. It's got the same cuckoo as the first one.
It's quite racist.
Let's stop. Yeah.
The Danny Thomas Show.
You know, Kleenex is the largest selling tissue in the whole world.
Okay, well, that was fun. That was a fun jaunt through film past. And again, we've just been...
Yeah.
This is kind of a bit of a throwback episode where we've gone back to the events of the week. You mentioned Dick Van Dyke. The producer of the Dick Van Dyke Show, Sheldon Leonard Burshad, or Sheldon Leonard, as he was known because no one was Jewish in the past. He died this week in 1997, and I was looking at all these stuff, it's like, he's done some amazing shows. Like I said, Dick Van Dyke Show's a brilliant sitcom. You look at these old sitcom names, like the ones that didn't really take off over here, and it's like, if I didn't know Leave It to Beaver was a sitcom, you would wonder, wouldn't you?
Yes, you would.
Likewise, another one he produced, Make Room for Daddy. Yeah, I mean...
I've seen that.
Yeah, apparently he's more known as a Danny Thomas show. Those stories about Danny Thomas are probably to not be Googled.
Move on.
But anyway, that all inspired me to put a quiz together, which is, are the following a 1950s sitcom or a pornographic film?
Okay.
Let's see how we go. Number one. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Professional Father.
I'm hoping that's a sitcom.
Sitcom or porn?
I'm really... Sitcom. Please let it be a sitcom.
1955. Dr. Tom Wilson is a child psychologist who is successful with his patients, but less effective with his own family. Sitcom.
Thank God. Thank God.
Dear. Number two. Sex Boat.
I mean, I'm assuming that's pornography.
Two guys sneak aboard an all-girl cruise ship with 600 horny mouth-watering broads for six whole weeks with not one dude aboard.
Now, what would be funny here is if you said that this was on CBS and aired for 3 years.
Yeah, it was, of course, a 90s sitcom. No, that was a pornographic film, sadly. Number three, Dick and the Duchess.
It's a sitcom, isn't it?
1957 CBS sitcom set around London about Dick Starrett, an American insurance claims investigator based in London, who is married to Jane, an attractive patrician English woman who he calls the Duchess.
Okay. Good. Good.
Number four.
Yeah.
The Devil in Miss Jones.
I think that's pornography.
1973. Miss Jones is tired of her life and commits suicide. Because of her suicide, she should go to hell, but she has the option to return to Earth and live life, according to one of the mortal years. Porn. It's porn. It's lust. She does lust.
Right.
She does lust. Lad up and he can see it going in a lot.
Yeah, all right.
Number five, The Bottom Dweller.
Sitcom.
Unfortunately, it's a porn film. A ship captain uses his boat to help couples work through their sexual problems. 1993. You see why I picked this now? They do, yeah. Number six, Heaven for Betsy.
Surely a sitcom.
1952, Jack Lemmon and his real-life wife, Cynthia Stone. Star as newlyweds Pete and Betsy Bell. And she is a secretary turned homemaker who always had to get Pete out of jams. In jams.
When you said Pete and then you paused, I thought you were going to say dud. And I was like, why is Jack Lemmon playing Peter Cook? I don't understand.
All right, Betsy Bell. I went to work today. I had to get out of a series jam. Did you really?
Then they just say the C word for 22 minutes.
Cancer. Number seven, Farmer's Daughters.
Oh, porn.
1986, a farm couple keeps the bank at bay and supplements their income by making porn films starring their three newborn daughters.
So hang
on. With John Leslie, not that one, as the archetypal travelling salesman, and Ron Jeremy in a cameo as a greedy banker.
Wait, so hang on, this is a porn film about making a porn film?
Yeah, it's quite meta. It's quite it's quite meta.
Yeah, I'm sure there's lots of referential stuff in there that you've got to really be paying attention to get, or you've really got to be, you know, part of the scene to understand properly. Yeah.
Number eight, Mr. Peepers.
Sitcom.
Wally Cox stars as Jefferson City's high school science teacher, Robinson J. Peepers. Was a sitcom indeed.
The thing is, right, you could have said that and then you could have followed it up with, and he watches his pupils have sex, and it would have been a porn film.
Yeah, is it fair? You know, if things that works out for Wally Cox, who knows? Also, Cox. Number nine.
Number nine.
Champagne for Breakfast.
Porn.
High executive Champagne hires Harry as a chauffeur for her sex trips.
There we go.
Doesn't explain any further. The job provides Harry with women, too many of them. But his boss is so horny that she asks him for the same thing when he comes by to complain.
Right.
High executive Champagne.
Okay.
In the sex blimps in New York City.
I understand. Can we get this last one over with, please?
Number 10, Willie.
Oh, sitcom.
Yeah, Jude Havoc stars as Willie Dodger, a lawyer from rural New Hampshire, who joins a vaudeville troupe.
See, I was sure that for the last one.
In the premiere episode, a young Aaron Spelling plays a dog catcher as Willie defends the owner of a dog blamed for scaring a farmer's sheep.
See, I was sure that for the last one you were going to go with something like, you know, anal cheerleader sluts for or something. Yeah, yeah.
No, I'm aware. No, it's 2020. I'm a new man. I'm a new...
Right.
Also, it's Willie. It's called Willie.
Presenting June Havoc as Willie.
And finally... finally, in this nice little return to 2020 with your pals Ben and Phil, what else happened on this week in history?
Well, Ben, on the 13th of January in the year 888, Charles the Fat died.
What?
Charles the Fat.
Charles the
Emperor
Fat.
Emperor of the Carolingian Empire from 881 to 888. He was the youngest son of Louis the German. Yeah, so what I thought would be fun, right, is if we had a look at some entertaining royal epithets from over the years. Because Charles the Fat's, I mean, it's blunt, but it's funny.
Oh. It is, and I kind of feel if I were him, I'd have said, don't call me Charles the Fat. Call me Charles the King. All right, Charles, you fat.
I've tried to whittle it down, and I've got 16.
Oh, my God. Oh, 16.
Vladislav the Elbow High.
Oh, he does what he says on the watch name. Yeah.
King of Poland from 1320 until 1333. He was little.
Bracket short ass.
He was a little guy. There we go.
Oh, dear. He was the Ronald Corbett of his generation. 15.
Albert the Peculiar.
Yeah.
Duke of
Austria.
I think
he was one of the Grumbleweeds.
He was, yeah. Duke of Austria, 1395 to 1404. Also called Albert the Patient and Albert the Wonderful, which doesn't square with Peculiar.
They're three different stories, you know, by three different... This is like Rashomon for humans. It's like, no. At 14!
14. William the Bastard. Now,
led by Sean Bean.
No, well, this is one that you already know. This is the less well-known nickname of William the Conqueror.
Really?
Yep.
Can't imagine why he didn't take off.
Well, he was the illegitimate son of the Duke of Normandy. So, there you go.
Yeah, because you can say bastard because it means...
Yeah, it's literal in this case. It's bastard. Not just an insult.
But, you know, there's only one. Brian the c***.
Ian the mother. Which, to be fair, in medieval times, would probably also be a literal description. But...
Yeah, that would have been fine. 13!
13. Alfonso the Slobberer.
Did he crash to Earth from the planet Melmac? By any
no,
chance?
Sadly not. King of Galicia from 1188 to 1230. He foamed at the mouth when enraged. So there you go.
Okay.
Have that.
It's probably another dog botherer. That's a problem. Number 12, John the Dog Botherer.
No, Justinian the Slip-Nosed.
Slipknot?
Slip-Nosed, his nose. So, he was a Byzantine emperor. He was deposed in a rebellion. He had his nose sliced off.
Ow.
But then he got the throne back in 705 and he had a solid gold nose instead.
I mean, wow.
And then in 711, he was overthrown and killed in battle by his own soldiers. So.
Yeah. How did they know which one it was? It could have been any of them.
Imagine that, though. Someone's cut my nose off. Right, fine. I want to replace one. Yeah, but make it out of gold.
Are we at 11?
We are at 11. Anne, Queen of Bees.
I'm down with this.
Yep.
Now, was she just like queen over bees, or she just liked bees and so was also a queen?
She was actually a duchess in France, 1692 to 1736. She founded her own...
So she wasn't a queen, presumably, and it was wasps.
Listen, she founded her own chivalric order, the Order of the Honey Bee, in 1703, so then she became Queen of Bees. So there you go.
No, I'm not buying it.
Fair enough.
Sorry, it's like you are the Duchess of Wasps until better notice.
I have no more to offer you on this topic.
I have no more to offer you except bees. And I'll be honest with you, there's too many of them. Oh, there's so many bees. 10!
Bernard the Hairy Footed.
I don't know what you want me to do with that one.
There isn't anything to do with it.
I mean, it's like, what should we get Burton for Christmas? Well, there's no point getting him socks, is there? Because he is some socks.
Apparently so.
He is
there you
human
go.
Socks. Yeah, number nine.
Number nine, Vasily the Cross-Eyed. Grand Prince of Moscow from 1434 until 1435 when he was overthrown by forces loyal to his brother.
By someone who wasn't cross-eyed, presumably. That doesn't strike me as a name no one said to his face.
No.
It's like Bog-Eyed Steve. You know, number eight.
Number eight, Bermudo the Gouty. Guess what he was called
now.
That?
Just noises. Just noises now. Go on.
He had very bad gout.
Oh. He it's half real. You can't just put a Y on end of it and go,
It was so bad. Gouty. So bad he couldn't ride his horse and had to be carried everywhere. That's how bad his gout was.
It's so bad he had gout. Yeah, good old Gouty. Sneaking up the back.
Gouty is, of course, everyone's favourite character from Porridge.
Seven.
Seven. Olaf the Titbit. King of the Isle of Man from...
Titbit?
Yep.
So presumably he collected those women's magazines.
No. It just meant he was small. Sorry.
That's so disappointing. There's so many options there.
Isle of Man.
I do too, but not after that one. Number six.
Number six, Childeric the Idiot.
Childeric in Need.
King of the Franks from 743 to 751.
And again, I don't feel that's one that was said to his face.
Well, given that his reign was ended by him being deposed and dumped in a monastery, maybe they did.
Well, they just went, no, you go there now. And he's like, oh, okay, see you. Five.
Five, Manuel the Sausage Maker.
I mean, if that wasn't a sequel, that should have happened, shouldn't it?
So...
Right, do you remember when Russell Brand phoned him up and he went, ah, sausage maker, I've had my sausage in your granddaughter!
I mean...
Hey. And then they shut the BBC down.
So this one works on two levels, apparently. First of all, he was born in an area of Spain known for producing sausages, but also... Mm. He was having a long-term affair with the... He was the Prime Minister of Spain. He was having a long-term affair with the Spanish Queen. So, there we go.
So, basically, he made sausage and he was sticking it in a lot.
Apparently so. Hey-ho.
Four!
Half Dan, the bad entertainer. So, Half Dan is the son of...
Quarter Dan.
Further up two-thirds in... No, no, Dan. No. No, you will not guess his dad's name, but we'll get to his dad. apparently, his nickname refers to his habit of paying his soldiers generously, but providing them with little food or entertainment. So there we go.
You know what? You know, it was a lovely march into Mesopotamia. Honestly, you know, the locals couldn't have been nicer. We slayed loads of people, but there was no karaoke on. The bar shut at 9 o'clock and didn't have any tenants on. I'll be honest with you, 3 out of 10. I wouldn't come again. I wouldn't. You know. Right, so we're in Thermopylae, right? And then it's all of a sudden he goes, oh, I'm sorry, Joe Pasquale can't come. We've got Billy Pierce instead.
I feel it's like not. You've belaboured the point.
It's not okay.
So yeah. Half Dan the Bad Entertainer.
Number three.
Pepin the Short. It's not great, but, you know.
No, it's not. Martin the Short.
It's King of the Franks, 751 to 768.
Guess short. What?
What?
Short.
Yeah.
Yeah, brilliant.
Move on to two.
Yeah, number two.
Number two, Ivelo the Cabbage.
I feel we've gone sideways. Please tell me this isn't because, like, he was in some sort of vegetative state.
No, it's not. He was a Bulgarian farmer who led a peasants' revolt, proclaimed himself Emperor of Bulgaria in 1278 and was overthrown the following year and assassinated. But because he was a farmer, cabbage.
Shagged a cabbage.
There we go. Also known as Ivelo the Swineherd as well. So, you know, take your pick.
Well, you know, sausages or potatoes, you know.
Yeah.
Fella from the other one says he threw a lettuce at me head. That's just the tip of the iceberg.
Oh.
That's why he said cuss.
Move on.
Number one.
Number one. It is the father of Halfdan the Bad Entertainer.
Oh, God.
The 8th century king of Norway, Eystein of the Fart.
Could you play that again, please?
Eystein the Fart.
The Fart.
The Fart.
Singular.
Fart. Singular.
Singular.
Yep.
Not even enough for a full set of
no,
parts.
Just one. Just one.
Just the one.
I don't care that this is so childish. I don't care. Imagine if that was your nickname. Apparently, it's usually taken to mean he was a busybody or a loudmouth, although no definitive explanation has yet been found.
Oh, he done a fart. And everyone went, oh, who did that? Singular fart.
He did one once that was so bad.
The fart.
The fart.
Well, thank you very much for that list. Fill the content.
Yeah.
And on that fart-based conclusion, I feel if anyone were going, I need a new podcast for 2020, what's this one about? Sex sitcoms, fatty fat man, and Bad Boys 3. You know, I feel pretty much if there's no for you in there, then you are, they say when you are tired of Charles the Fat, you are tired of Charles the Fast. Oh, and until we meet again, do the Twitter at Don't Let's Chart. Do the Patreon. Thanks to all our new subscribers.
Yes.
Who've given them the New Year's gift of us talking about Ogbogson's this follow through. And until we meet again, I have been Ben, the barely making it through this episode.
And I have been Phil the Fart.
Oh, happy 2020.
Make room for Daddy.